Hello, I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is The Week from In the Loop. So, another week went by, and I guess we're all still okay. Sure, the stock market got all sad on us, but it's kind of like when one of Nostradamus' deadlines passes or something like that. I thought, like, by a week ago, we had to finish this bailout thing, or the earth was going to open up and swallow both Wall Street and Main Street and Sesame Street and the E Street Band. But we did get, eventually, a bailout slash rescue passed this afternoon. The president signed it quicker than a Texas two-step. Basically the same bill as last week, but made better by attaching a bunch of unrelated stuff. Now it's time for Treasury to work its magic, figure out just how bad these bad loans are, and then buy them, and hope for the best. Okay, not quite that simple. Christopher Carroll is an economist at Johns Hopkins University, and he's been writing almost daily about the credit crunch and the bailout that is supposed to help us avert disaster. Professor Carroll, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So now we have a plan. How much better should we feel?
Well, we should feel a lot better than if nothing at all were going to be done. But I don't think we should be doing nothing. Something is rather urgently needed. And at this point, since nobody in Congress has put forward an alternative to the Secretary's plan and events have moved on rather precipitously, we probably have to turn over the power to him and hope he does something that we'll be pleased with afterwards.
So how much depends from this point on how the Treasury Department actually implements the plan?
Everything really depends on how it's implemented. The Treasury Secretary has really awesome discretion in this bill to do pretty much whatever he wants to do.
I thought the whole big deal was that Congress was jumping in to assert some oversight and not give him, as everyone's been saying, you know, carte blanche.
They gave him oversight in the sense of they're going to be watching what he does, and then they can hold their nose and say it stinks afterwards. But still, he has the authority to do pretty much what he wants.
Now, one thing you've been doing throughout is surveying very closely the views of your colleagues, economists around the country, and you have described them as being in revolt, practically, over the concepts that are behind this bailout or rescue, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still the case, you think? Are economists really unified in believing that what we've got is, if not, you know, a complete load of crap, is definitely not as good as it might be?
It's not at all clear to very many of us that the particular ideas that Secretary Paulson has proposed make a whole lot of sense. He's proposing basically taxpayers should buy up these toxic subprime assets that Wall Street doesn't want. And Secretary Paulson, you know, spent his career on Wall Street, and he, I think, feels sort of viscerally in his gut that these securities are kind of the albatross holding Wall Street down, and if only we could get rid of that albatross, happy days would be here again. He may be right about that, but the economics profession has a somewhat different gut than the chief of Goldman Sachs does, and the economics profession's gut says it's not clear that this is the best thing for the taxpayer, and we ought to at least have some discussion of the alternatives before we just turn everything over to him.
When the economy last took a dive after 9/11, one of the crucial aspects of the recovery, it seemed to be the fact that everyone, Americans anyway, were unified and really motivated to recover. Kind of seems like this crisis is hardly inspiring us to come together, you know, to get out of this mess. There's still great division over the bailout and even about the cause of the problem and who's to blame. How dangerous is it, you think, that the American public, American politicians are so divided at this point in time?
Well, I think that we have lost a lot of trust in each other in the last few years as a result of having been told all sorts of things that later turned out not to be true. Fundamentally, financial markets are based on trust. So I think it may well turn out to be difficult to get a solution that everybody trusts was the right solution.
How else can some of this trust building happen, particularly in the financial sector where it really needs to be rebuilt?
Everything needs to be done as sort of openly and transparently as possible. All of the procedures that they're going through and the logic behind them, the reasoning that leads them to those conclusions, needs to be laid out a lot more clearly than it has been so far. And maybe if that is done, then we'll have a little more confidence.
Professor Carroll, thanks very much for joining us.
All right.
Economist Christopher Carroll from Johns Hopkins University. We'll link you to some of his great writing on all this stuff from our website, minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. I'm Jeff Horwich. And, you know, like a lot of people this week, of course, I've been a little worried about my own money, right? People are talking about bank failures and mergers, and I know they're all going out of their way to try to make us feel better, but I just thought, you know, well, we've got a moment here. Maybe just check in on things, you know?
Calling First Federated Financial. Please hold, and a representative will be with you shortly.
Bienvenido para continuar en español o female single.
Calling to make sure all your money is still here? Trust us, it is. To have our automated system confirm that all your money is still here, press 2. Otherwise, continue to hold, and someone will be with you momentarily.
Rather wait for a real person, I think.
Thank you for holding. Your time is important to us.
Uh-huh.
Know what else is important to us?
No.
Your money. We look after it as if it were our own. So of course we know it's not our own. It's yours. And it'll be waiting for you right here if you ever want to pop in and say hello to it. Thank you for your patience as our representatives assist other anxious customers.
All right, I guess I feel a little better. I could tell this is going to take a little while, so I'll keep on hold here and we'll check in a little later. In the meantime, what else happened this week? You know, while Congress was hemming and hawing over this $700 billion bailout, they passed another spending bill almost as large, full of all kinds of stuff. $25 billion in loans to American car makers to do what they should have been doing all along and design fuel-efficient cars. Interestingly, this same bill also lifts the ban on offshore oil drilling. There's also a bunch of money in there for hurricane victims like Angelina, a listener from Galveston we talked with a couple of weeks ago. All in all, this bill has more than 2,300 of those pesky so-called earmarks that John McCain loves to hate. Most of them are related to the Defense Department. In fact, the bulk of the spending in this bill is defense-related. Also this week, country of origin food labeling went into effect for fresh meat and produce. Unfortunately, it won't tell you if your Cadbury egg was made in China. And it is so, so tempting to have fun with this next story. But we won't, mateys, because it is serious business. Somali pirates off the coast of East Africa clearly did not know what they were getting into when they took over a ship full of Russian-made weapons. It's not like kidnapping a tanker of palm oil or a bunch of fish or whatever the usual thing is. They're anchored off the coast of Somalia at the moment with the U.S., Russian, and European navies all closing in. Freelance reporter Rob Crilly has been reporting on growing piracy off the Horn of Africa, and he's following this latest standoff for the Christian Science Monitor. And Rob's on the phone with me right now from Kenya. Rob, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
What's the latest that you're hearing on the status of the FENA and the pirates on the FENA?
Well, we're locked into a standoff now. Two U.S. warships have issued a warning to the pirates that they will take offensive action if any attempt is made to offload the weaponry on board. So I think now we're into a wait-and-see phase.
What do you imagine the mood is like on that ship as they realize that the whole world is perhaps closing in on them?
I spoke today with their commander on board the ship, and he said he's got 60 pirates on board with him, armed. He wouldn't say what they were armed with. They're pretty bullish that no one is going to try and intervene for fear of damaging the ship and hurting the crew. And secondly, that if anyone does try and launch an assault on the boat, he can see them off.
So we think of piracy as basically extortion or banditry, primarily economic. These guys are a little different, or at least they say they're different, that they're protecting and patrolling these lawless Somali waters. Do you buy that?
I don't buy it, no. They say that there is no one else to protect Somali waters. There's no functioning government, and that international fishing fleets are essentially stealing Somali fish, or other vessels have been dumping toxic waste in their waters, and they're really doing a service to their people. They claim to be fining ships that come through their water. Well, the truth is they're taking these ships in international waters, and they're demanding massive ransoms. They are essentially a bunch of gangsters.
So this notion that the pirates are purveying, that they're some sort of coast guard, protectors of the waters, how does that play in Somalia with the Somali people?
Well, actually, it's been quite a good bit of marketing by the pirates, and it's something that a lot of people now buy into. There is nobody else to keep foreign fishing fleets at bay. And many of the pirates actually started life as fishermen. They began boarding foreign vessels and demanding their share of the catch, and eventually they realized they could make a lot more money from ransom. So there is a feeling that the pirates are sticking up for the rights of Somalis.
The pirates so often get away with huge ransoms, so they have in the past anyway. Where does all that money go? Are they, I don't know, they're not retiring and buying big houses. What happens to all of it?
Well, strangely enough, some of them do actually retire and buy big houses. Many of the pirates do the trade for a year, build up some savings, and then get out. Or maybe they may start up their own business onshore. But I think a lot of the money is also going offshore. It's going into the money markets of the Middle East and coming into capitals like Nairobi. So I think there is also quite a sophisticated money laundering network behind it.
Rob, you had a funny blog post from a few days ago about a conversation with your editors in the West about this story, and all they want to do is make pirate jokes back at you. Is the term pirate, because of all the baggage that it has, I guess, is that not really helpful to having the rest of us treat this like the serious issue that it is?
It is a subject that many people find difficult to take seriously. You talk to people about what they understand by the term pirate, and they would talk about the Pirates of the Caribbean and break into pirate language, miaris, and all this kind of stuff. The good thing about it is that it's very difficult as a reporter in East Africa to get editors around the world interested in Somalia. The country's been a basket case for 17 years. People, quite frankly, are sick and tired about hearing about more bloodshed and more problems in Somalia. But I think at the same time, we should recognize without solving some of the problems on land in Somalia, we'll never actually solve the problem of piracy. So using pirates has actually captured people's imagination. In a way, it's a powerful tool for getting people like your show talking about the problems of Somalia.
Rob, thanks very much for taking some time to talk with us.
Great to be with you.
Freelance reporter Rob Crilly speaking with us from his home base of Nairobi, Kenya. I'm Jeff Horwich, and you're listening to The Week from In the Loop. You know, I'm still hanging on hold here with my bank. I know they passed the bailout today. That's great. But, you know, I'm nervous still, you know, and I just kind of like to check in with the bank, make sure everything's cool. Wonder if I'm getting through to anybody yet. Let's see.
Thank you for continuing to hold. You probably already know your deposits are FDIC insured up to $100,000. But did you also know that at First Federated, they're protected round the clock by wolves and a snake pit? No one protects your money better than First Federated. Please hold. All our representatives are currently busy guarding your money.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on.
At times like these, maybe you've considered doing what Grandma did, storing your hard-earned money under the mattress. At First Federated, we're already one step ahead. Our specially designed mattress vaults mean peace of mind for our customers and a good night's sleep for our wolves. Ask your representative about First Federated's mattress protection plan. Someone will be with you shortly.
Dang it. Okay, well, I'm not giving up yet. It's one of those things, right? After you've been on hold for a while, it kind of becomes like a point of honor. So we'll see if we can get through to somebody by the end of the show. Let's go in a totally different direction here. We did a call out nationally not too long ago for people to come on the show and give us briefings about the news. And we got a veritable flood of very interesting propositions. People who follow news on sports, politics, architecture, food. But this week, we're going with somebody who can take us as far as possible from our earthly troubles. Patricia Phillips is on the phone with me to give us the week in space. Patricia, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Bartlesville, Oklahoma.
And why are you such a space junkie?
I'm a space junkie because I have been one all of my life, and now I write a space news column for TheExaminer.com, and at one point I was a public information officer for NASA.
So this is a good week to do the week in space because Wednesday, right, was NASA's 50th birthday.
Absolutely. I think it's a wonderful milestone to go from not being in space and not quite knowing how to get there to walking on the moon, living in space on the space station. That is an enormous thing for just 50 years.
So that's been the kind of rosy end of things, but let's start with your first item, which is maybe not so happy for space fans. What's up with the Hubble telescope?
Oh, poor Hubble is having troubles again. One of the components on board is a data controller that sends all of the images, all of the data back down to us on Earth. Well, with no warning, it stopped working last weekend.
And this is beyond the other various things that they already knew were wrong with Hubble, right?
Right. And this one was pretty shocking. But then again, you have to stop and think, how long does your average, shall we say, cell phone last these days? Well, this little component has been working for 18 years. Because of this, it's impacted space shuttle launches. The Atlantis, with a 7-member crew, was going to lift off on October 14th. They decided to delay Atlantis. They're going to the warehouse. They're pulling off a spare part. They're going to turn it on, test it, give it to the astronauts. Up they go, and then they will replace it next year.
Well, the astronauts have already been training for like 2 years to fix all this other stuff that's wrong with the Hubble telescope. Is this kind of the last attempt to sort of set Hubble right? Otherwise, is it just space junk after this?
Oh, don't use that term, space junk, please.
I'm sorry.
You break my heart.
I didn't know that was so heartbreaking.
But no, that is the rock bottom truth. Because we are phasing out the space shuttle program and NASA will not be flying for many years, this is the last mission to Hubble. So Hubble will be allowed to work for as long as it works, but when things start dying, that's going to be the end of it.
So that's kind of rough news for NASA, but in the private sector, there was good news this week for space exploration. What happened there?
Well, the SpaceX folks really got one up and flying.
Let's just explain for people. SpaceX is a private company that's trying to put rockets into space, right?
Correct. They're one of many commercial companies that are trying to develop space vehicles for different sectors of the space program. So this launch was very, very important. They did manage to get it up and flying, which was a great thing.
After, two failures so far?
No, this was the fourth attempt. There were three failures so far. And the last one was very embarrassing because it carried the ashes of Star Trek actor James Doohan.
Scotty.
Mm-hmm. So he didn't quite make it to orbit.
And he's in the, he's in the ocean somewhere now.
Somewhere, yes.
Which is about as vast as space, but it's just not the same.
Yeah. But, you know, this time they got up the Falcon spacecraft. It was a beautiful, beautiful flight, and it will just give them a real impetus to keep on flying.
So let's take ourselves as far away as we can from the financial bailout and the wars and problems of our planet, Mars. What happened on Mars this week?
Oh, that wonderful little Phoenix lander found snow on Mars.
Snow?
Yes, indeed. Not only is there water on Mars, but it's snowing. But there's a downside to it.
Okay.
Pretty much the Martian winter is coming in. The lander is powered by solar panels, and as it gets darker and there's less light, well, the batteries aren't going to get, you know, repowered. Slowly, its capabilities are going to erode. Basically, the little lander is going to go to sleep one day and not wake up.
Dare we say Mars junk?
Mars junk. Oh,
not to break your heart again.
I know this space junk thing. We've just got to get that sorted out.
Patricia, thanks very much.
And thank you so much for having me.
All right, Patricia Phillips with us from Oklahoma and the Week in Space. We also turned our listeners loose this week on another big news event. Of course, the vice presidential debate last night. Two listeners who have had poems on our show in the past were assigned each of them to cover one of the two candidates. So let's start with our short poem from Aaron Bells, who is in Los Angeles.
Sarah Palin, I love your smile, the highlights in your hair, the alluring sparkle in your eyes. But more than these, I love the air of folksiness you project, an air Joe Biden in tonight's debate seemed to want to emulate. For you, it just comes naturally. You bless the hearts of the CEOs of Exxon and Conoco and roll your eyes, those mischievous boys. You say we have a heck of a lot of good lessons to learn about financial responsibility, and darn right it was the predator lenders. And you describe diplomacy as having your friends and allies ready to back you up there. But I'm still taken with your hair, the way it's pulled straight back except for those amazing streaky highlighted bangs. They're bombs bursting in air.
All right, Aaron Bells watching Sarah Palin very closely, apparently. Aaron's got a book of poetry out, if you're interested. It is called The Bird Hoverer. And now we turn to Craig Kenworthy, a listener of ours in Bozeman, Montana, with a short poem from the perspective of the other guy.
She doesn't know much about much, but did I put her on a bridge to nowhere? Where was the deer in the headlights instead of just the deer? Golly, you betcha, that's for sure. Dang, she's quoting me about you, Barack. I figured only Hillary would have to worry about that. Yes, we both love Israel, Governor. I just know more about their history than what's in the Old Testament. You want more authority for the VP? Please serve up another one. Nice shout out to Cheney, though. Well, if you'd like to hear more about the last 8 years, I'll be in any swing state that's still swinging.
Craig Kenworthy from Bozeman. We're a little picky, but we're always up for poems on the week's news. You can get those to us on our website, minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. And, you know, I think I'm still on hold with my bank here. It's getting ridiculous. I just, you know, we're in a financial crisis. I just want to talk to them. I want to make sure my money is okay. I don't know how long it's going to take before somebody helps me out. Let's see.
Thinking of refinancing your mortgage? Looking to finance a home remodel? We can help. If you currently make more than $300,000 a year, hold $1.5 million in verifiable assets, and would be willing to wear an ankle bracelet monitor, you may qualify for financing from First Federated. Talk to a representative to see if you're eligible. Someone will be with you momentarily. Stocks feel too risky? Even bonds make you feel uneasy? First Federated Financial is pleased to offer our customers new investment options for these uncertain times. Introducing the First Federated Armageddon Fund. Our managers help you hedge your bets with targeted investments in sectors like camping equipment, personal firearms, and ramen noodles. When preparing for the worst, stick with the best. First Federated Financial. Thank you for your patience. A representative will be with you shortly.
All right, that's it, bank. I give up. As much as I love listening to that god-awful music I don't have all day, I'll just have to presume my money's safe. And as we wrap up here, you know, we've got our bailout bill. Let's all agree to retire one of the great annoying phrases of the past 2 weeks. Wall Street and Main Street. Really, are we that different? Just to help sing this phrase off the stage, as it were, my friend Larissa is going to join me here in a tribute to some words, frankly, we heard way too much of in recent days. Well, I live on Wall Street.
And I live on Main Street.
I'd probably ignore you if we passed on the same street. Wall Street.
Main Street.
Wall Street.
Main Street.
Let's call the whole thing off. I'm a fiscal high flyer.
I'm a big Walmart buyer.
I wouldn't lend water if your house was on fire.
But the big loans that you wrote
put us both in the same boat.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Oh, what's good for me is good for you, I'm sure you know.
But oh, aren't you walking off with more of my hard-earned dough?
Oh, you say bailout.
And you say rescue.
I say eliminate mark-to-market accounting.
And I say, what?
But we know we need each other, so we better put our differences off. Let's call the whole thing off. Is produced by Sandon Totten and me. We are edited by Kate Smith. That was Larissa Anderson singing with me, and my cubicle neighbor Jackie Fuller was the charming voice of First Federated Financial Bank. Get the podcast at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. I'm Jeff Horwich, whistling into the weekend.